from WJCT in Jacksonville. This is our weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. I'm your host, Vince Kong, and this is Redux. It's April 14th. On this episode of Redux, what started out as a peaceful protest devolved into violence last week, and we'll get you up to speed on the who, why, and what exactly happened in Hemming Park. Then, the life and times of one of Jacksonville's most infamous characters was brought to stage, that serial killer Otis Toole. Find out why. And finally, the world's oldest skate park turns 40. Here's why River City residents should care. But first, some news. WJCT and the city of Jacksonville are hosting a traveling wall at Metropolitan Park commemorating American soldiers who died in Vietnam. The wall that heals is a half-scale replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride went to the opening ceremony to bring you this report.
Billy Everett Lawrence, Richard M.
Vietnam
Miller.
Veteran Anthony DeLeo is reading the names of Northeast Florida soldiers who lost their lives in the war. 250 American flags, one for each person, are speared into the ground next to the wall.
And my friend and best friend, Rocco DiGazio, but he wasn't from DeVille.
DeLeo and several veteran volunteers helped build the wall on Wednesday, stretching across Memorial Park. The names of more than 58,000 lost in Vietnam are on it. All weekend, volunteers will help visitors find their loved ones' names.
I'm trying to figure out how these things are numbered.
Yeah, so what do they give you?
45 West.
Okay.
Otis Bess, a veteran, is looking for the name of one of his best friends he grew up with in Jacksonville. It's on the west side of the wall.
56 Line. Good Lord. Oh, there it is. Randolph Sampson. That's an old classmate of mine. Him and I played together from 4th grade through 12th grade.
He says Sampson was killed after 2 months in Vietnam when he was 18.
It's just so much about him that just bring back memories. Makes me wonder what would Randolph be doing now.
Do you have a good memory you could share about him?
Oh, yeah. Randolph was something else.
Of those who died in Vietnam, five were 16 years old. The oldest was in his 60s. The wall is open 24 hours a day until 3 in the afternoon on Easter Sunday. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
Guess who was in town this past week? U.S. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson, making his first trip to Jacksonville for a tour of the troubled Eureka Gardens housing complex. As WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, he met with residents and local officials to lay out his plans to reform the public housing system.
Need to clean this unit, needs to be painted, there needs to be outlet covers on the walls, hardware on the doors.
Millennia Property Management spokesman Jeff Crossman is walking through a Eureka Garden apartment. It's dingy, missing electrical outlet covers, and there are cracks in the floor. Next door is a different story. That unit is clean, and it's had minor repairs. Crossman says if his company buys the federally subsidized property, every apartment will be redone.
This is going to be basically gutted and refinished.
Cleveland-based Millennia manages Eureka, while the Tennessee-based Global Ministries Foundation still owns it. Millennia is appealing a March inspection failure as HUD Secretary Ben Carson arrives on his nationwide listening tour. Carson, a retired neurosurgeon with little housing policy experience, says Eureka tenants are a model for the country.
When people get together and begin to advocate for themselves, and then they have some local representatives who are willing to stand by their side, it's really quite amazing what can be accomplished.
He says he wants more housing project residents to create tenant unions and to provide family savings accounts for down payments on homes, as well as create community centers and health clinics on site at complexes like these. Carson also said he'd like to see nationwide standardization of HUD inspection protocol. But with President Trump's proposed budget cuts to his department, some have asked whether that's promising too much. Carson says no.
Well, I don't really see a correlation. between budget cuts and doing good inspections.
A cash-strapped HUD was partially blamed for ineffective and inconsistent inspections. Millennia Properties has until late May to shape up, or the federal government could completely take over the complex. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
Coming up later on this program.
It influences music. It influences art. It influences surfing.
The Kona Skate Park turns 40. But first, a recap of the events that led to the arrest of who some are calling the Hemming Park Five. As WJCT's Lindsay Kilbride reports, Jacksonville attorney John Phillips says he's conducting a review of what happened during last week's protest as he prepares to represent at least one of those arrested.
The arrests happened during a demonstration against last week's U.S. airstrikes in Syria. Phillips says he's reviewing all available evidence of what led to the arrests.
We start today, and we're going to investigate. We don't do just an over-the-weekend investigation and say, you know, this crime was violated or not. We're going to investigate all the parties.
As widely circulated videos show, chaos broke out between protesters, one counter-protester, and police. Five protesters were arrested on felony charges, including inciting a riot, resisting arrest, and battery on an officer. One video shows the start of the scuffle when a counter-protester who goes by the name Gary Snow gives a middle finger to protester Connell Crooms. When Crooms seems to lunge towards Snow, police take Crooms down. Snow says protesters were taking his belongings. He called into WJCT's First Coast Connect.
So they were the first ones to engage. And I reacted and retrieved my property. And after that incident, things got heated and escalated. And that's when JSO had stepped in.
Snow was not arrested, and police say Crooms was the violent aggressor. A video shows several officers trying to arrest him, but some observers are outraged, including his mother, saying it was brutality because he's deaf and couldn't hear their commands. Wells Todd with the Progressive Coalition says he's considering a lawsuit against JSO.
But we're holding Sheriff Williams and the police department here responsible for what happened. And we're asking for a public apology. And we're asking the city to pay for damages.
Other videos show Snow prior to the incident that evening with a large pro-Donald Trump flag yelling over protesters and jumping on stage with them. Protesters asked police to separate him from them, but they didn't. Snow regularly counter-protests events seen as anti-Trump or anti-police. There's also a video online of his burning and shooting a Pan-African flag with a gun. He says he did it in response to groups burning the American flag.
Because I actually stand up to racism. Racism comes in any form and any color. We have a new movement in America called Black Supremacy and Black Nationalists.
He denies he was trying to incite a riot Friday, as protesters say. Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams said in an email statement, officers don't tell groups where to stand during protests. He says protesters are encouraged to respond to agitators in a calm demeanor and must refrain from physical violence. However, he says the incident has prompted him to look into how JSO manages protests, and new protocols may need to be put into place. Lindsay Kilbride, WJCT News.
I actually support military action in Syria, but I have a great respect for the coalition going out there and having their voices heard. But the main issue that I find with this is it becomes increasingly apparent that JSO and other law enforcement around the country are ill-equipped to handle protesters. And it doesn't look like police organizations across the country are really equipped well enough to understand this is how to properly separate these people, because the pro-war protesters that came in, especially Mr. Snow, really incited what were already hot and heated emotions to escalate this conflict to where I believe justice was improperly served by the JSO.
That was one of our listeners, Tony from Jacksonville Beach. Scattered throughout the rest of this podcast will be more thoughts from you, our listeners.
Hi, I'm David Luckin. Join me Tuesday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. on 89.9 FM and streaming on the WJCT app for the music you won't hear anywhere else. All styles played, all songs considered.
Thirty-four years ago, Jacksonville police arrested Springfield resident Otis Toole for arson. In the months that followed, Toole confessed to being half of a murderous duo responsible for more than 100 brutal slayings across the Southeast. Though Toole's involvement in some of the crimes was confirmed, others were called into question as the years wore on. Now, as WJCT's Ryan Bank reports, a mystery surrounding one of the city's most notorious serial killers has been adapted for stage play after a Jacksonville professor turned it into a novel. The performance, which wrapped up last week, will now be available on DVD.
Standing shoulder to shoulder in front of a reproduction of the burned-out Springfield boarding house Toole torched in 1982, three student actors at Florida State College at Jacksonville are playing different versions of the infamous killer. Cameron Scaff is Otis the Mama's Boy.
Sometimes I go and lay down on my mama's grave, you know that? I can feel her laying down under there, underneath me. It's like when I was a little boy and we'd lay down.
Preston Pittman is Otis the Killer.
Everybody's the killer. You stomp on a bug, you a killer. You kill a hog, you still kill it, you see. So don't make no difference what you kill. Cutting up somebody, it's just like butchering a hog, you see. Or a cow, ain't make no difference.
And Cross Blocker is Otis the Lover.
But remember, Henry, you was down there on Beaver Street before the soup kitchen opened yet. You was hungry. And I was down there looking for some company.
FSEJ English professor Tim Gilmore is the author of Stalking Otis Toole. He says as he retraced Toole's troubled steps, he realized there wasn't just one version of him.
I started to see where in different places he said these totally different and contradictory things, and that actually piqued my interest even more. So he could sometimes say, he would always say really offensive things, but a lot of the stories did not make sense together.
Toole first confessed to setting the Springfield boarding house ablaze, barricading a former lover inside and killing him. He proceeded to confess to a litany of slaughters, including the high-profile murder of Adam Walsh in 1981. He claimed he committed the crimes on behalf of a satanic cult with another former lover. But investigators would find no evidence to link the two to most of the 108 murders he confessed to. Gilmore says he was taken by the ambiguity of a man who claimed abuse at the hands of his overbearing mother, a closeted gay identity, and a lust for blood.
The story of Otis Toole and all of these different Otis Tooles that I try and bounce off of each other to come to lead the reader to some kind of conclusion of who the real Otis Toole was, I think they're a story about Jacksonville.
Gilmore is quick to point out his book isn't meant to excuse Toole's actions or the pain he caused his victims, but rather to examine fame and identity through the lens of the macabre. That's why FSCJ professor and the show's director, Ken McCullough, says the story is perfect for the stage.
Am I glorifying him? I'm putting him up on a pedestal. And I think when I started working on it and rehearsing it, I realized it's really not so much about Otis as it is about the nature of identity and the nature of, you know, what's true and what's not true, the cult of personality. It's really about so many other issues that are way above and beyond, weird Otis Toole here in Jacksonville.
McCullough says though the material isn't for the faint of heart, he felt it was important to remind people of a cautionary tale most try and forget.
Whether Otis's upbringing made him evil or whether he was always evil, you know, you can debate that, chicken or the egg, I guess. But he did, you know, commit some horrible crimes we know of. I know he falsely confessed probably to a lot of them too, but we know he did do some things that were horrible.
FSEJ staged Stalking Otis Toole, a Southern Gothic, for one weekend only, but a DVD of the performance will be available for purchase. Ryan Bank, WJCT News.
I was at a Donald Trump rally in which there were hundreds of people in attendance between the supporters of the Donald Trump rally and the protesters. JSO was able to effectively de-escalate any confrontations that happened in between these two crowds where the emotions were highly volatile. My question to JSO is, why were you able to control and de-escalate the situation with hundreds of more people involved and way more confrontations happening, but you allowed a 50-person rally in Heming Park to devolve into such violence?
That was one of our listeners, Maria from the Beaches, sharing her thoughts on what transpired in the aftermath of the protests of last week. All right. According to the Guinness Book of World Records, what city is the home of the oldest skate park? Give up? Well, it's Jacksonville. More specifically, it's here in Arlington. It's the Kona Skate Park. It's turning 40, and we sent our intern, Serena Summerfield, over there to bring you this report.
Kona Skate Park owner Martin Ramos says Kona has had a lot of influence in the skating world and Jacksonville's young people, with more than 20 professional skateboarders coming out of Jacksonville in the last 40 years. And it's hosted legends of skateboarding, from Tony Hawk's competing in 1982 to Mitch Kaufman's performing the first vertical drop in 1978.
It's about the culture that comes around Jacksonville, that culture that transcends the act of just riding a skateboard, because it influences music, it influences art, it influences surfing.
To celebrate its 40th anniversary, Kona will hold a festival in late June with skateboarding competitions, renowned skaters, and live music. Serena Summerfield, WJCT News.
And that's our show. You can find all of our audio and web stories at wjctnews.org. You can also stream this podcast as well as all of our on-air content on the WJCT app, which is available on iTunes and the Google Play Store. And of course, find us on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. I'm Vince Kong, and thank you for listening.